And welcome everybody to the Lakers Outsiders podcast, where we are here to recap the Lakers 112-93 loss to the Sacramento Kings. The Lakers dropped to 0-3 on the year against the Kings, which feels really weird to say, but it is what it is this year. Welcome everybody that's tuning in. Joining me today is from Reno, Nevada, or somewhere close. Do you actually live in Reno?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. joining me from Reno is Hani, my right hand man nowadays. Hani, how's it going?
Pretty good. I got a headache, and I think it's 90% because of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there. I think we've all been there plenty of times this year. As always, I'm your host, Gary Kester. Thanks for tuning in. We got a couple things to talk about. Pretty special date in Laker history is coming up here in a couple days, so we're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to talk about the game. I did not get to watch the game, unfortunately. Well, I don't know if I should say unfortunately. But, I didn't get a chance to see it. I was at work during the game. I got to see maybe the last minute and a half, and the only thing I can remember was Quincy Acey was at the scorer's table trying to check in for like 2 or 3 minutes, and it was kind of funny. But so Hani, I'm just gonna throw it to you and have you kind of recap the game a little bit and just kind of break it down for me and whoever else didn't get a chance to see the game.
So basically, it was just a repeat of the first two games against the Kings, where the Lakers' defense was terrible to start. They gave up, I think, 20 points in the paint in the first quarter. So they were on pace for giving up 80 again, which was how much they gave up in that first game, or something close to it. Their defense let them down early, as well as their offense. The offense eventually got better, and they tried to hang in there, but just a whole lot of DeMarcus Cousins with, I think he had 36 and 16 today, which is another common theme of the other games that they've had against the Kings. And Rajon Rondo playing one of his better games of the year, or the past like 2 or 3 years, I'd say. So all of that was just a little bit too much for the Kings, or for the Lakers, I should say.
I did see that Rondo just like obliterated Ryan Kelly on a dunk. Shout out to Ryan Kelly for what I'm assuming is his role in The Revenant. With Leonardo DiCaprio, he's got like the full-on beard and the long hair thing going. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was in that movie somewhere. So that's what I'm gonna look for when I go see it.
Does that mean we should trade him to the Grizzlies?
I mean, I don't know what we'll get for him. I mean, they'll probably give up Marc Gasol, right?
Yeah, probably.
You guys need Ryan Kelly in your lives down there. No, if only they were as bad as the another pro sports team in the state of Tennessee, Tennessee Titans.
That's a load of malarkey.
Oh, man. I should start charging people every time I hear that damn pun. I'm going to be a rich man.
I think I've used it 3 times on you already.
Yeah, you've used it 3 times. Harrison used it twice. I don't know. Everybody's used it. I hate you all, but one thing I did notice looking at the box score was Brandon Bass played extremely, extremely well. Just talk about kind of how his performance today and some things he did really well.
He's just been the ultimate pro, and he keeps working harder than pretty much anybody else on the team, which is I remember the last Kings game when the Lakers were coming back. Bass was a huge part of that because he was guarding DeMarcus Cousins the whole fourth quarter, and he did like a phenomenal job of it. And today, when the Lakers were making a run in the second half, he was also, again, a really big part of that. Early on, he was really good working with Randle, and I think that Randle-Bass lineup has been working a little bit better recently because both of them have been better playing with each other, passing the ball to each other. It oddly kind of calms Randle down a little bit, so he doesn't barrel into guys as much, and he can find Bass cutting behind the defenders. So I think that's a really big part of what Bass does for the team.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed with Bass this year is he's surprisingly explosive. I didn't think he was like as explosive as he is. There's times where it just looks like he's kind of trapped underneath the basket. He just explodes to the rim and just dunks on someone.
Yeah, and there's like three guys around him every time. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he's a very quick leaper, and that was – I was really surprising to see because, you know, just kind of watching him from afar, you know, the past I don't know how many years with the Celtics and, you know, in his previous stops, you know, I always thought, you know, he's a good hustle energy guy that rebounds and he can – you know, he's a good pick-and-pop player, hit that 15-foot jumper. But, yeah, I'm very surprised at his athletic ability, especially because I think he's in his 30s now, right? I don't remember.
He's close. I can check really quick.
Yeah, I don't remember how old he is. He's been in the league for a while though. So decent amount of mileage on his body, and he's, you know,
he's still exactly 30.
Exactly 30. Nice.
Yeah.
So, no, I was all right. Yeah, I think just from looking at the box score, I mean, Brandon Bass was really the only guy that jumped out at me in terms of numbers that were like really efficient and just, I mean, really, really solid overall. Again, just going off the numbers, the young guys played all right. Clarkson and Russell were kind of inefficient, a little inefficient shooting the basketball. Randall really struggled probably to finish, I'm assuming. What was kind of the main reason you think his shooting was inefficient tonight?
I don't think it was like the usual rushing shots or any of that. I think it was mostly under control. But he does struggle against length, and the Kings have a ton of that with DeMarcus Cousins and Willie Cauley-Stein and those guys. So I think that messes him up a bit. And he had a bunch where he was just really close to the basket. He'd lay the ball up, and it would just roll off the rim, which was really weird. He also, for whatever reason, struggled just like catching the ball. He had a little bit of Hibbertitis. And for some reason, his hands were super slippery today. He couldn't catch the ball at all.
Oh, Hibbertitis. Yeah, that's going to be one we use for the rest of the year. Unless he's traded by the trade deadline, which is a possibility.
Supposedly.
Another thing I noticed in the box score, which was, again, kind of hilarious to me because we've talked about it endlessly, was the fact that Kobe Bryant played another 31 minutes tonight. And this is not too far removed from Byron Scott saying something along the lines of, obviously, he can't play 30 to 32 minutes a night. Well, Byron, 31 is right between 30 and 32, so... Apparently, hashtag math is fun, right? Since you're a math genius, I mean, just what are your thoughts on him continuing to play Kobe, you know, 30, 31 minutes? I mean, was it justified? Because I heard he did go back into the game in the fourth quarter. I mean, was it justified tonight? Was it the game kind of in reach, or do you think we should have just sat him?
Not really, because so – he played a little more than he should have in the first half, and it was okay because he was playing all right. He was mostly under control, didn't take too many bad shots, made a few. Second half, he wasn't nearly as good, and when he was brought back in, I think they were down double digits. And a couple minutes later, he took out D'Angelo Russell, who was finally playing well. Like, he struggled early on, but he was playing really well in the fourth quarter. So it's like, the excuse that you're bringing Kobe in to make a run doesn't make sense if you're taking out one of your top two players of the game.
Yeah, let's take out the hot hand and get the legend in there. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's not surprising that Kobe usually is worse in the second halves of games because, again, like his body is so worn down. You know, the second halves is the lift is continue to fade as the game goes on. And yeah, it's, you know, it's frustrating. I mean, I'm going to be at the game on Saturday in Portland. And, I mean, I wouldn't be totally upset, I guess, if Kobe played that many minutes because I'll be there live. But at the same time, it's like, you know, because Kobe did say after the game that he wants to play in every single game from here on out. And, you know, I get why he wants to because, you know, it's – you know, it's his last season. He's got 30-something games left. And, you know, he just wants to go out there and play as much as he possibly can and give every fan their money's worth, because, you know, most fans pay a lot of money to see him play this season, especially after he announced retirement. Ticket sales just skyrocketed. So, I mean, I get Kobe wanting to play in every game, but I think if he wants to play in every game, you gotta lower those minutes so that it actually has a chance of happening. Because if he plays 31, 32 minutes every single night, I mean, it's only a matter of time, matter of days, weeks, whatever, that, you know, he might, his body just says, like, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, especially because they got a bunch of games, like, right next to each other as well. Like, they're playing two nights from now and then again three nights from now. So it's like, especially when the game's out of reach, and Kobe hasn't been really playing all that well, and you're at home, it's just, it doesn't make any sense for him to play that much.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, he at least gets to, like, the All-Star break where he'll get a few days off. Obviously, he'll play in the All-Star game if, you know, unless, you know, he's just not healthy and he just can't go. But yeah, having, you know, 4 or 5 days or whatever it is, to just rest his body and then play, you know, a little bit in the All-Star game, hopefully, you know, that'll be enough to kind of rejuvenate his body a little bit for the home stretch, you know, so to speak, of the regular season. So, yeah. Since we're on the subject of Kobe, we mentioned a little bit earlier that there's a big date in Laker history coming up on Friday. It'll be January 22nd, 2016, which marks the 10-year anniversary of Kobe's famous 81-point game against the Toronto Raptors, and was the result of many people being blocked on Twitter by Jalen Rose. So let's talk a little bit about the 81-point game. Honey, do you remember watching it when it happened 10 years ago?
I don't, because I was a youngin' and I wasn't really into basketball yet, so I wasn't even a fan. So all I've seen are YouTube highlights and, like, every now and then NBA TV showing the replay.
Yeah, I remember watching it. I think I was 13. Yeah, I was 13 when that happened, and I remember watching it and just thinking, like, you know, honestly, I kept thinking, like, this is just another Kobe game. You know, he's just doing what he does. You know, he's just putting up monster numbers. Figured he'd finish with, like, 50 something. Like, and then, like, Kobe was in his prime, doing that all the time. You know, so it was no big deal. But then he goes off for 28 in the fourth quarter. I think it was 28 in the fourth quarter. And it's just like, man, like, every time he kept getting to, like, 60, it was like, oh, man, I want him to get 70 now. And then gets to 70, it's like, go get 80. And, I mean, I just wanted him to shoot every single time down the floor. And, I mean, even they were sending some double teams at him and stuff and just trying to do whatever they could to get the ball out of his hands, and he was still just scoring. And the remarkable thing was, like, they needed him to do that, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. Because
they were getting beat by a very bad Raptors team. You know, they're getting pretty good. Yeah, at home.
Yeah.
And for him to just completely take over the game like that, you know, just, I mean, truly remarkable. And just goes to show how good Kobe was in his prime. You know, to me personally, because I was a little too young to see Jordan play. You know, I was very little when he was winning championships and stuff. I mean, to me, still to this day, Kobe's the best player that I've ever seen, you know, personally. Mm-hmm. In his prime, he was a guy that could literally go out and drop 50 whenever he wanted to, you know. I mean, you just, unfortunately, you kind of can't do that every night or you'll kill yourself. But, I mean, just truly unbelievable player. And, man, I'm gonna miss that guy. I miss that guy so much. All right, and then one last little bit on Kobe before we kind of get to some viewer questions. I saw this from the Kamenetsky brothers. They were asking, this was kind of a good question, what to you was more impressive, Kobe's 81-point game against Toronto or his 62-point game against the Mavericks, where he scored 62 in three quarters and had them outscored by a point in those three quarters?
That one is really incredible, and I think really underrated as just such an amazing thing. Yeah. But I go the 81, and the reason I did that, I made sure to check the stat before we started. He scored 51 in the second half. So if he was on that pace in the first half, that's breaking Wilt's record. That's 102 in a game. If he does it for both halves, that's amazing.
Especially for a guard, you know, in like the modern era. And, you know, because Wilt, you know, Wilt was just so physically dominating as well, you know. I hate when people say, like, Wilt, oh, he just, you know, he was only good because he played against smaller defenders. And it's like, he still played against guys like Kareem and Bill Russell. And, I mean, Russell's smaller defender still. But, you know, Wilt went up against some heavyweights too, you know. They're about even for me, in all honesty. Like, you know, you think, like, because Kobe's 81-point game, like I said, he had 28, I think, in the fourth quarter. If he does that with the Dallas game, I mean, you're talking 90 points.
Oh, Jesus. That's
so crazy. I mean, it's both of them are just truly unbelievable, and I feel very, very lucky to, you know, remember both pretty vividly, and to be able to, you know, watch that as a kid. That's something that's going to stick with me for a while, and that I'll tell my kids about, or my grandkids, or, you know, whatever. So, Kobe, thanks for being you, man. You're awesome.
The other one other underrated one, 50 points in 4 straight games. That's pretty crazy too.
That too. I do remember that. And he had another streak, I think. I don't know if it was part of the same streak. I don't think it was. But he had 40 plus in 9 straight games.
Jesus.
And I was at one of them because he had 39 in like the final seconds, and he got fouled because this was at Utah. And he missed the first free throw, so everybody was like on edge because the Lakers had the game wrapped up. And then, of course, he buried the second free throw to get to 40. But
nice.
He was like a walking video game, man. Like, he was 2K personified. It's just crazy how good he was in his prime, and a lot of people nowadays kind of forget that, you know. So,
just especially because it happened on pretty bad teams.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, the Lakers –
shout out to Kwame Brown.
Yeah. I mean, the Lakers kind of sort of wasted 3 years of Kobe's prime, you know, which sucks. It sucks, but it is what it is. Everybody's got to rebuild. So, all right. So we're going to transition to some questions now. We'll try and run through these relatively quickly. We do have a little twist at the end here. If you follow us on Twitter, you already know what it is. But, yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. Okay, so this first question is from Brian Bird. I hope no relation to Larry. this asks, what's wrong with Randall? What's going on with Julius?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I'll go, one, I think his confidence is shot since being benched mostly. Though he did have a good game, like last game, whatever that was, I don't even remember anymore. But... yeah, I think a lot of that is just his confidence. A lot of it is the players that he's played against when he was on the bench. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, played with, not against. So he's been more of a focal point for other defenses. And a lot of it is just holes in his game that need to be improved before he can be super efficient.
Yeah. My answer to that is he's essentially a rookie. You know, this is his first year playing games, and you know, a lot of people were, you know, notice or said before the season, like, that him sitting out last year, he might be better off, you know, because he kind of got to sit back and watch and study and observe. You know, I can agree to that to a certain extent, but at the same time, if he plays all of last year, this is his second year, you know, playing games, you know, I think he'd be so much farther along than what he is right now, you know. So
yeah,
I think it's just growing pains. You know, he's still adjusting to like the speed of the game, bigger defenders than in college, longer defenders, because you know Randall is a little bit undersized in terms of, you know, I think he's listed at 6'9", which isn't bad, but when you're going up against 7-footers that can jump, you know, it's tough. It's tough to adjust to and get accustomed to, and you know, we played half a season, you know, so it's just growing pains. I think his work ethic, he works too hard to not figure a lot of these things out. So, you know, I think ultimately he'll be fine. It's just, you know, he's basically a rookie, so just kind of gotta wait. So, next question is from our very own Kyle Hartwick. who asks, should the Lakers fire Byron tonight or tomorrow? And in parentheses says that this is a trick question. So I'm assuming the only answer is yesterday.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. I think we passed the test.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like a true or false question. It gave me two options. It's like a true or false question, and then there's another option that says neither. Okay, so this question is from Josiah Woods, and he asks, why does Byron Scott hate Tarik Black? And I added Tarik Black in there, but I added Tarik. So why does Byron Scott hate Tarik Black? He's discussed it a few times, which doesn't really make sense, but I mean, why do you think what's going on with those two?
I don't know. According to Byron, it's because Tarik doesn't play balls out, whatever that means. I don't know exactly what balls out means, but from context, I can say that I think Tarik does play balls out. metaphorically speaking.
Oh, man.
So I really don't understand it.
Well, we know Byron wants Tarik to get kind of this mean streak to him, which is crazy to me because he plays a lot like Brandon Bass. You know, he just relentless motor, always playing with a ton of energy and a ton of effort. Defends pretty well. Not a great defender, but defends pretty well. On this team, he looks like a great defender. Mm-hmm. Really good pick and roll guy and a good athlete, not a great athlete. I mean, when he's out there, he makes an impact. I don't know. I don't know why Byron doesn't like him, but, you know, there's a lot of things that Byron does that we don't know why he does what he does. So I just hope that the Lakers don't trade Tarik Black away or just let him walk in free agency, because I think he can be a very serviceable player as a part of this rotation off the bench. So hopefully the Lakers management sees that.
Just think about Larry Nance Jr. and Tarik Black coming off the bench for your team. That's pretty awesome.
If you've got like Russell or Clarkson running the point, you know, because they kind of stagger the rotation. I mean, that's so many lobs. That's okay. So this next question is again from Josiah Woods, who asks, do you think Philly will pass us because we are only 3 games up and Byron Scott is our coach? Honey, I'll let you take that one.
That's a very compelling case, the second part of that especially. But I don't know. I want to say I doubt it just because I think the Lakers have more talent and that will eventually win them a few extra games. But these D'Antoni and Ish Smith Sixers are nothing to laugh at. They're pretty solid.
That's why I'm gonna make a bold prediction here on the podcast.
Oh man.
I'm gonna go ahead and say the Lakers will finish with at least a share of the worst record in the league.
Okay.
So I'm saying Philly will catch them. Maybe I'm buying a little too much into Ish. I don't know, but they've been playing
a load of Ish.
Yeah, but they've been playing extremely well. I mean, even in games that they're losing, like the Knicks the other day, that was a really fun game. But honestly, I mean, if they foul Carmelo there in the last couple of seconds, they probably get out of there with a W instead of letting him get a 3-pointer off to tie the game. So, I mean, they're losing close games for the most part now. So, and the Lakers, I mean, you look at like tonight, they lose by 19 at home to Sacramento. So,
yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, Sacramento's not bad. Don't get me wrong, but you know, at the same time, they have so many games like this where they just get run off the court. So,
yeah.
All right. Next question is Shazeb Imam. I apologize if I mispronounce your name. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. But he asks, what did you think of Russell finishing the game strong after starting 0-5, taking quite a few tough shots?
I think it's actually kind of something that's happened a few other times. He's had other games where he struggled early on, just with his jumper, because his jumper's not great yet. it's pretty solid for a rookie, but nothing special. But then he goes on runs where he's either passing the hell out of the ball and getting assists to his teammates, or he all of a sudden gets hot and makes a few jumpers. And I think that's a good sign for a guy that's supposed to be the superstar of the team moving forward, yeah. That he can take over the game in multiple ways also, not just with scoring. And I think that's a really positive thing to take from his game so far.
Yeah, to me, what it says, it's a testament to his confidence. You know, even though he's 0 for 5, he still believes that he's going to start knocking down shots. You know, he's not going to just start to shy away and not shoot shots. And, you know, he's just going to keep playing his game. And I think that's kind of a common quality that most stars in the league have, is that even when they're struggling, they feel like they can just turn it around with one made basket. You know, there's a saying that something I've always kind of believed in, whether it was playing or coaching, and as a player, maybe it got me into trouble sometimes, but to make shots, you got to take shots. It's really as simple as that. So just keep shooting. You can't shoot your way out of a slump or something, anything like that, by not shooting, you know? So
you just got to pick up, but I'm perennially in a slump.
you're the my bad guy, right?
That's exactly what I am.
My bad.
The my bad guy, and the guy that keeps running into dudes and getting hurt.
Oh man! All right, so some of these questions are kind of repetitive. Okay, so this is kind of a free agency question. We got a couple of these, but okay, so I'll combine these questions. This is another one from Josiah Woods and one from BJ Mehta, who, again, has, like, the coolest avatar ever with Peyton Manning with the long hair there. So first question is, who is a better fit, Nicholas Batum, DeMar DeRozan, or Jay Crowder, which Hani and I did some research before the show. And Jay Crowder is not a free agent until, I think, 2020, you said?
Yeah. Okay, he just signed a five-year deal.
Yeah, so that ship has sailed. But I think we can both agree that between Batum and DeRozan, in terms of fit, it's probably Batum, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, because he's the better defender and he's the better shooter. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't need the ball in his hand as much as DeRozan does. So I think he fits pretty perfectly with the young guy.
Yeah. For those that don't follow me on Twitter, I mean, I've been so high on the Lakers going hard after Batum this offseason, because I think he is tailor-made to play alongside D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, like those guys. Because he, like you said, he doesn't need the ball to be effective. He's a good shooter, good defender, you know. And he's still, I think he's only 26 or 27, so.
27, which was really surprising to me, because it feels like he's been in the league forever.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's still relatively young. So it's like you're getting, even if you got to pay big money on a four-year deal with an opt-out after the third year, I mean, if he opts out when he's 30, you know, that's not bad, you know, because you're still getting his, like, kind of the tail end of his prime. So, I mean, that would be, even if you have to pay a little extra with the cap increasing, I think it's still an ideal fit. So, and then this question to kind of piggyback on the DeRozan thing, from BJ Mehta, he asks, if we sign DeRozan, do we trade Clarkson? And he says, Clarkson projects to be potentially the same player, or is there room for both?
I think I would lean on trying to make it work at first, which is kind of scary because that could lower Clarkson's trade value if it doesn't work out. But I would try either playing all three at the same time or moving Clarkson to a six-man role, which I think might be what he ends up being anyway. Not sure about that, but it just seems like he has the kind of game for that. So I think you can try to make it work with all Clarkson and DeRozan on the same team.
Yeah, I'm a believer in at least giving it a year. You know, people have mentioned the thought of, you know, getting Ben Simmons and playing alongside Randle, and how, you know, they both struggle to shoot jumpers, that you'd have to probably trade Randle away. I would still, you know, give him a year at least to try and figure things out, you know, before you just trade away what could be a star caliber player, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I would give him – I'd give him a year to try and figure it out. You can always move Clarkson to, like you said, move him to, like, kind of that sixth-man role. He can be the backup point guard. And, mm-hmm. you know, him and Lou could be the kind of the backup one and two. So, yeah, you gotta give it some time if it does happen. I mean, we'll see. But, okay, so this is another – I think this will be the last question because one is asking how what we think about Brandon Bass and Julius Randle, and I think we both agree that we really like those two together. You talked about that a little bit earlier on. Last question is from Carl at Grown Simba with three A's. He asks, who should the Lakers target in next year's free agency, which we've obviously talked about a little bit here just now, and I think we both agree on Batum. Who are some other guys you think the Lakers should go after?
One guy I've been thinking about a lot over the last couple of weeks, and this is probably more if they don't get Batum, is Kent Bazemore, which upsets me a little bit because they let him walk for nothing. But yep. He's been improving a ton in Atlanta, and I think he's a Batum-like player where he can shoot threes, he can defend, and he doesn't need the ball.
His length helps him so much defensively.
Yeah.
Really, really long defender. And yeah, I'm all aboard the Kent Bazemore bandwagon too. I mean, I liked him when he was here. I was really surprised to see the Lakers let him go. I would hope they would want to give him a second chance. I don't know if he'd want to give them one, but that's another guy I'd like to see them go after. And I'm going to mention another guy. He's a restricted free agent because everybody says Hassan Whiteside, which obviously you kind of got to take a look at, but it's a little skeptical just because of, you know, his antics, I guess, his a little bit of immaturity. But another guy I would take a serious look at is Festus Ezeli from the Golden State Warriors. I think he's really good fit, you know, a good defensive center. Good pick and roll guy from every time I watch him, at least, but does help to have that much talent around him. But I think he could just be a good complimentary piece for the Lakers and could be a good rim protector. And he's a young player, but he is a restricted free agent, although the Warriors do have a ton of money on the books. So, and they'll have to worry about Harrison Barnes as well, who also is another guy I'd like the Lakers to take a look at. But did you have anybody else you wanted to throw in there?
Ezeli, I kind of agree with, and I think Jacob wrote about that in his mailbag piece. Ezeli being his second, I think I asked him the question too, ranking Whiteside, Ezeli, and Horford as center targets for the Lakers, and I think he said Whiteside first and Ezeli second, and I think I agree with those. I think that's kind of the guys that I'm really thinking about in free agency. There's not a ton of guys.
We want Kevin Durant.
I mean, if you insist, I guess I'd take him.
Yeah, we're operating under the assumption that the odds of getting Kevin Durant are basically the same odds as me marrying my choice of the current Laker girl. So, nice.
There is a slight chance.
There's a slight chance, like Lloyd Christmas and Dumb and Dumber. I'm just saying there's a chance. All right, so that's going to do it for questions. Oh, Jacob Root asks, whose beard is better, him or James Harden? And he asks, whose defense is better? And I think we both agree that Harden is better at both of those. So moving on.
I think my beard is better than Jacob's, but, you know, whatever.
Harrison Fagan, that's who's got the best beard. Shout out to Harrison, who's probably not watching this yet. If he is, he's probably never going to let me hear the end of that. But okay, so we're going to put a little twist on the end of the podcast here. Since the Lakers are now 9-35, they are three wins behind Philly for the worst record in the league, which would give them the best lottery chances, and still two games ahead of the Brooklyn Nets. It's going to be an interesting three-team race, which that Brooklyn Nets pick goes to the Celtics, so that really sucks. But I'm going to try and do a little screen share here. We're going to go to tankathon.com. If you guys aren't following them, at tankathon is their Twitter handle. Pretty funny group over there. I don't know if it's a few guys or just one guy, but pretty funny dude that we interact quite a bit with. And we've gotten to know them kind of well over the past couple years. So I'm going to try and do a screen grab here. A screen share. Okay. And apologize for the little vortex there. All right. So, Hani, can you see my screen?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, as you can see, the lottery odds. Lakers right there in second. They lost four games in a row, which is green on the marker, which is always funny. To keep a top three pick, they have a 55.8% chance, 19.9% chance of getting the top overall pick. So we're gonna do a lottery simulation on pretty much every podcast from here on out, since I mean it's just about all we have to look forward to. And it's all the way in May, so we still got a ways to go. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to try this. We did this a little bit last year, but we just kind of tweeted it out. So and, I'll keep track of the results, and we'll see kind of if the percentages match up. But, all right, so here we go. We're going to see if the Lakers keep their pick today. And boom, look at that. Yes. All jump all the way to the number one pick. And the Orlando Magic jumped 13-2. They had a 2.2% chance of landing in the top three, but they jumped from 13-2. That would be pretty remarkable. All right, so the Lakers get the first overall pick. Okay, just for the hell of it, Hani, first pick, who are you taking?
Oh, man, crap. I'm taking me and my perennial slump. No, I'll say Brandon Ingram just because he's like the only guy I've watched play so far.
And just to be different, I'll say Ben Simmons just because he's a stud. But and I have a hard time picking a Duke player. So, yeah. All right. So let's get it back from the screen sharing. Yeah, that's a trip. but yeah. So first lottery sim went pretty damn well. Thanks, Tankathon, for being you guys. I've visited that site so much over the past couple of years. But all right, Hani, anything else you want to talk about before we sign off?
Shout out to the Wolfpack for sweeping Larry Nance Jr.'s Wyoming team this year.
That's right.
I'll be not watching the Lakers against the Trailblazers when you're there, and I'll be watching them against UNLV instead. Not the Lakers, the Wolfpack.
I was going to say, maybe the Lakers should downgrade and start playing some Mountain West teams. Shout out to the Boise State Broncos. Now that Larry Nance is out of the way, Boise State seems to be taking over the Mountain West in basketball. So
apparently this was the first time in 78 years Nevada won in Laramie.
Oh, my God.
So hashtag blessed.
Blessed. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. Yeah, it was a good podcast just because, you know, the Lakers got the top pick. So that's a good note to sign off on. I think the next time when we do – the first time we do a simulation where the Lakers fall out of the top three, I might just shut my laptop and walk away. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to everybody that sent us questions. I apologize if we didn't get to them. We try and keep these things relatively short so they don't drag on. But sometimes just looking at our old podcasts, odds are there are questions we've answered before. So, Hani, thanks for jumping on the podcast with me.
Thanks
for those that followed along, sent us questions. I'll try to get a podcast up after the Friday game. I will personally be on a flight to Portland that day during the game, but I should be good to go after the game. It just depends on what's going on when I get down to the old PDX down there. So, all right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.